Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the "no animals were harmed" message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Hi, welcome to the show. We're going to get started here in just a second. But first, if you're looking for the most convenient way to listen to this podcast, The Bob Seska Show, I have a solution for you. The Patreon app for your smartphone is the best way to stay up to date with new shows, and it's the best way to listen, too. Here's why. Every time there's a new episode, you're going to get an automatic alert on your phone, notifications for the free shows on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, and notifications for the Friday after party and the postmortem shows, too. You can listen at home or in the car with a couple of swipes, and you can join our community of listeners in the comments under each episode. Subscribe for as little as $1 a month at BobSeskaShow.com or Patreon.com/BobSeskaShow. Thank you for supporting this completely independent podcast, and now let the cartoons begin.
Recorded live in the USA, covering the whole wide world.
Right on!
This is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
From our nation's capital, it is Wednesday, July 21, 2021, and this is the interview edition of the Bob Seska Show on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. Hi, what's up? My name is Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Hello. Day 183 of the Biden-Harris administration, 475 days until the 22 midterms. Find me on Instagram at TheBobSeska and on Twitter at BobSeska_go. All right, good and bad news here today. Our guest didn't materialize, so we have an encore interview for you, and it's a pretty damn good one, if I do say so myself. This will be my conversation from back in May with the great Andy Kindler, one of our favorite comedians and all-around weirdo supreme. You might know Andy from his podcast with J. Elvis Weinstein called Thought Spiral, as well as his appearances on The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. And you've probably seen Andy on shows like Portlandia, Marin, The Larry Sanders Show, and the animated series Bob's Burgers. His comedy album, Hence the Humor, is out right now. Go get it. AndyKindler.com. Links in the description at BobSeska.com. We covered a ton of ground on this episode, from COVID to cancel culture and comedy tropes in there, and all points in between. In the meantime, if you like what you hear today, don't forget to subscribe to our bonus content at Patreon.com/BobSeskaShow. Okay, here comes an encore interview with the great Andy Kindler.
Hello.
Andy, it's Bob Seska. How are you?
What a pleasure. Isn't this a pleasure?
Yeah, it absolutely
I know,
is.
I sound phony.
Yeah, yeah.
Why do I sound phony? Everything sounds insincere from me. Not good.
Well, thank you for your attempted sincerity. That was nice. It was a nice touch right here at the beginning.
What a wonderful treat to speak to people on the phone.
Isn't it amazing? It's so throwback. I'm trying to drag people back to like 1968. I figure, why not? Why not?
You know what's unbelievable? I spent my entire life on the phone until there were no more phones, and now I haven't had a phone conversation in 20 years. Now I don't want to have a phone conversation. I jump 3 feet in the air when the phone rings, like my father would do if he had a cell phone.
Oh, yeah, exactly. That's what I do. It's like, oh, my God, why is that phone making a noise? Does that mean someone is on the other end trying to talk to me? And then I hope to God you don't end up with a rectangle of cancer in your face because of this interview. So let me ask you.
I don't want that.
Did you ever reach a point during the pandemic when you broke down and ate some bread? Did that ever happen? And tell us about the tragedy if it did.
Well, you know, well, the thing is that my wife is on a gluten-free situation. So yeah. I'm hiding. You know, it's like when we first of all, for the first 6 months, we didn't even order food. We were so scared of the fomites.
Right.
Oh, you knew that word? Oh, my God, I thought I was a genius and the only one.
I vaguely recognize it. Please explain what fomites are.
It's how you can get COVID from, like, touching surfaces. That's what they were first scared about.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah, and I may even have the word wrong.
No. I think you got it right. I think it's fomites with an F. You know, along those lines, I have probably ingested so much hand sanitizer over the past year because we're always scouring all the food that comes into the house with hand sanitizer and soap and water. We're just super paranoid about the fomites, right?
Well, you know what I was thinking about was, you know, they have ultraviolet light, right?
Yeah.
So why couldn't they kind of, like, you know, shine that quick inside? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
A procedure. Quick inside, and then I'll never forget how the look on her face was when he was staring intently.
I know.
Because he was going to go further. Yeah, we could do a little look, you know. Yeah, just a little bleach inside. You squeeze a little bleach in, you blot it up.
Yeah.
He wasn't going to stop.
Yeah, I know. You could see the light bulb appearing above his head. Like, literally, there was a light bulb, and he thinks, oh, my God, I've got the solution here. I've come up with the answer. The inventor of Trump steaks sold in Sharper Image stores and malls has come up with the magic bullet to solve the COVID crisis.
Yeah, I love what he said once to somebody, you know, he was recommending hydrochloroquine or whatever. He goes yeah. I'm not a doctor, but he, like, pause as if the person waiting for the person to go, you are a doctor. Were you kidding me? You are a doctor. I mean, I think he literally believes that's all it takes.
And I was always curious how he intended to get sunlight into your body. Like, you could, what, you fill up a syringe with sunlight and pixie dust and a rainbow and then shoot that into your body somehow? I don't know. I don't know what his concept was for that.
I have been sneaking bread, but for the first 6 months, we wouldn't even order food. We were so, I did not. We made our own food. I don't know if you've heard of that.
No, it's unfamiliar if you're, I guess, not a Quaker. You know, how did you do it? I mean, you just buy the ingredients and prepare your own food? I mean,
it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
They used to have books.
Yes.
That you could, you know, put this much that. Now everything. Yeah, you see why I don't do a lot of sketch work. Because my yes and abilities are very, very stunted.
Well, I mean, the good news is at least you had your wife there to keep you sane. I mean, that was the thing. I can't imagine. Like, I think we have a mutual friend in Jen Kirkman, and she spent so much of the pandemic isolated by herself. And honestly, I was getting a little concerned there that she might go bananas at some point, but she was able to hold together. And I've been by myself. My girlfriend's been away helping her mom for the last couple of weeks, and I've been isolated by myself now for just a couple of weeks. I can't imagine how some people manage to go an entire year locked in their places by themselves without just, you know, going full like Tom Hanks in Castaway and talking to volleyballs and things like that.
Well, I was lucky in that in many ways I enjoy, because I have OCD, it actually helped my OCD.
Mm-hmm.
The isolation in many ways got me to focus on how much I was rushing and everything like that. And and so I got to the point where I was like, why would we ever have to leave now?
Yeah.
Our houses. And this, that we're on a phone call now, mm-hmm. way better to me, way better than Zooming. Why do we have to see each other visually? I mean, don't we get enough of that?
Yeah, that's right. And the other thing is, with Zoom, you always end up in those situations where the internet suddenly slows down and your face gets frozen in the most awkward place ever.
That's all I need is more delays between the delivery of the joke and the reception. That's all I require.
People
don't tend to get my material under the best of conditions.
Holy shit. Yeah, yeah. It was quite an adventure. And now, as you've seen, I don't know if you noticed this today in the news, but now the government has to warn very, very smart Americans not to put gasoline in plastic grocery bags, Andy. So I hope you're not doing that.
I have a very terrible admission to make to you, Bob. Mm. 3 years ago, I was 4 years ago, I was at a club, and I don't know, maybe somebody smoked pot. It wasn't me, but I got a sniff of it, and we were all goofy, and someone decided that they'd pour a little gasoline in a styrofoam cup, and I didn't stop them.
This was at a club? Where the hell did they get gasoline?
No, we were like, she had ran out of gas, so we were like in kind of in a gas station, but then all of a sudden... Someone said, yeah, you can put gasoline in plastic. Sure, that'll be fine. And then all of a sudden, it was almost like it could have been, I mean, the only thing that made it funny was that we didn't die.
Yeah, that's crazy. So the gasoline is in the styrofoam cup, and then what happened with it then? Is no one accidentally drank it down?
It just goes through.
And what's that?
It just goes through. It goes through the styrofoam. It just doesn't retain it, much like the plastic. Is that what will happen with the plastic bag? It'll go right through. I mean, that's what I'm thinking. I need that kind of warning.
I assume so. I mean, I normally just put Brondo in my plastic grocery bags. You know what I mean? Just putting gasoline in there. I imagine it was kind of like that scene from Breaking Bad where they fill up the bathtub with the acid to dissolve the body.
Right.
And then the bathtub just goes right through the floor. It's just a disgusting mess.
You mentioned a show that I happen to have binge watched, and I'm very excited about it.
Yeah.
A lot of times, if you said Ozark to me, boom, I got nothing.
Oh, you didn't watch Ozark yet? What's wrong with you? You haven't seen that one?
I saw the first episode. It seemed good, but I have so many things to worry about.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
I don't know if I can get into a new thing.
Yeah, yeah. That's just my thing. It's just we're overloaded now with so much entertainment. It's like too much entertainment. And especially during the past year with the pandemic, it's like, oh, have you watched Resident Alien yet? I will definitely check that
out. Everyone loved Tiger, whatever his name was. Exotic Joe Tiger.
Oh, the Tiger King. Was it the Tiger King?
Yeah, now I binge podcasts, all kinds of podcasts like that. And this one was starting to get on my nerves before it got popular because it was like, but I mean, I know why it was popular, but I do think that really took off way bigger because of people were forced to watch it.
Yeah. I was always curious about that because it seemed like, wow, these are awful people. These are terrible, terrible people doing terrible, terrible things to animals. And everyone's just falling in love with the Tiger King guy and his mullet. And I didn't actually watch it, Andy. So I'm sitting here evaluating. Yeah. Yeah.
You really didn't miss anything there.
Okay, good, good. Because I thought, all right, well, these are tigers being abused by rednecks. What's not to like? Why am I not watching this?
Because it is over. The thing is, when they're good, when it's a good true crime thing, it's not so over the top. So, because I've been binging true crime, because as I said in my act, my wife and I, we couldn't watch Trump anymore. We would watch a Dateline where a mother drives her whole family off the cliff just to take the edge off of Trump, just to relax a little bit.
I know. Everything.
Watch someone cut up their entire family just to take it all. Yeah.
Yeah. This is a lot better than watching Trump's COVID show every afternoon there for a while, right? Yeah.
I know. My wife couldn't hear one word of his, and then it would be like we would both just get ill.
You know, Andy, you were born the same year as one of my other favorite guests, Larry Charles. He's the director of Borat. I'm sure you're familiar with him. He's one of the legendary writers on Seinfeld. And you guys are both from Queens. And last time I talked to Larry, he told me all about growing up in one of Fred Trump's buildings. Did you guys ever have, growing up, ever have encounters with the Queens Clampets, the Trumps?
My father was a gas and heating contractor.
Wow.
And he and Trump was one of his clients. And you're not going to believe this. Trump did not pay my father.
I was just going to say your dad never got paid. Yeah.
Right. And my father hated Trump. My father was the first person in my life that I knew who hated Trump. One year as a joke, we got him for his birthday, the Art of the Deal, the board game. And we thought, he'll love this. He's like, why'd you buy me this? Because you hate Trump. And of course, we woke up the next day and go, what a bunch of idiots are. What's funny about that prank?
I know.
He hates Trump. And we bought him a Trump-oriented item.
What was the outcome of that idea? What did you think was going to happen at the end of that one?
We thought he would laugh, like, ha, 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 you know how much I hate Trump, you dog.
Right,
get out of here, you nutcase. But that's not what happened. It reminded him, as he saw Trump's hideous face on the front of the board game, it just made him more depressed.
Was your dad?
My father was very funny.
Was your dad typically a funny guy? What was your? Are your folks still around?
They're not still around. My dad. I had this joke where I said my dad died in January 2015, and I just want to say thank you, God, thank you. We didn't have to see Trump. I thank you for that. Then the audience would always get weird, but I would say, you know, look, it's my father. Who else am I going to joke about? But I was. I don't think he could have handled it.
Yeah, well, I mean, knowing how notorious those people were in Queens alone, just that personal experience by itself, much less all of the other horrible things that stacked up, and beginning around 2015. Yeah, the timing was. I mean, if this is even possible, the timing of your dad's death was pretty fortuitous, right? So
that's right. It's so funny because I would talk about it on stage. People would say, you can't talk about. Yeah, it's like, you know. And I said, yeah, my father, he would have wanted me to do weak material about his passing. Let me tell you that. Before I passed, he pulled me aside and said, Andy, when this is all over, I hope you turn it into another one of your bits that goes nowhere.
Was there ever a point where Trump stopped being good for comedy? I mean, that was the whole thing. I mean, comics, everyone who at least had one foot in the world of comedy was going, oh, Trump's going to be great. I can't wait for Trump. If Trump becomes president, this is going to be amazing. We're going to have endless, limitless material. At what point, though, did that kind of peter out and you suddenly realize, oh, shit, this is actually really bad. This is not good at all. Was there a moment in time or was it always like that for you?
It was always bad for me because I really didn't think the country would survive. If he got elected, so I was really depressed about the whole thing. But he was continuously hilariously terrible. And the thing is I've hated him forever. I did a thing on Comedy Central. They used to have a show called "The Root of All Evil,"
mm-hmm.
and I argued whether Trump was the root of all evil, or Viagra was the root of all evil. This is like in 2008, and it's online. You can see it. It's like, I hate to say I was prescient, or whatever that word is, but I didn't want to be that. I didn't want to be that prescient. I really was. I think majorly depressed from the end of the election till the next election.
Oh yeah,
I didn't see it being that funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's not a lot of there's not a lot of humor to be gathered from fascism. I mean, we tried to make some of the shit funny. I mean, you try to look at the way he talks and the way he behaves and just the gratuitousness of the lying, just the proud, defiant, I'm fucking with all of you, but right. I'm not going to tell you because you already know. You already know that I'm fucking with you. I mean, it was just like, it was that, and you try to make the best of it, and you try to get through it with your head down and pushing forward and trying not to, you know, take a running leap off of a cliff or something like that. But at the same time, ultimately, there was nothing hysterical about fascist idiocracies. It was just exactly what we came out of or what we went through and have come out of temporarily. But It's just lurking right around the corner, and that's the big fear. So I still feel like it's like, oh shit, it, you know, you gotta kind of find the funny somewhere, but at the same time, it's like the Bugs Bunny cartoons where the anvil is just hanging over your head waiting to drop. And that's what it's
and
like
I,
now.
And also I had so many jokes, and then I said, do you think German cable news in 1933 had stories like this? Do you think Hitler's going to pivot? Do you think there's a chance? When's Hitler going to pivot? And then I would do these jokes like, Trump is worse than Hitler because at least Hitler served.
Yeah.
He was in the army. he saw action. So, I mean, I had so many of those, but then even those, you can't keep doing them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know. Okay, we'll get back to our encore conversation with Andy Kindler here in just one second. But first, if you ever catch yourself thinking when looking in the mirror, I wish those under-eye bags would just go away. Well, you're not alone. Bags and puffiness under the eyes are a problem for millions of American men and women until now. Introducing the new GenuCell Serum with plant stem cell technology from Chamonix. Susan from New Jersey wrote, quote, I've been using GenuCell for a couple of months. The puffiness around my eyes is gone. Even the crow's feet and small lines have disappeared, and they haven't come back. I love the product. I use it under my eyes, around my cheekbones, and on my eyelids, unquote. With its instant effects, Chamonix says you'll see results in the first 12 hours or your money back. They guarantee it. Order now and get 50% off all GenuCell packages for summer. Go to lovegenucell.com/Stephanie. That's lovegenucell.com/Stephanie. Link in the description. lovegenucell.com/Stephanie. Thank you.
The Bob Seska Show.
You know, one of the things that gets debated quite a bit on Twitter these days with regard to Trump is this idea of, oh, if we just ignore him, he'll stop doing whatever it is he's doing. He'll suddenly discover that he's not as popular and he'll stop being a dick or something like that. That's kind of the logic. And I thought, you know, can you imagine coming out of World War II and saying, you know, the remaining Nazis that fled to Argentina, if we just ignore them and don't go after them, maybe there won't be any Nazis anymore. And that's, of course, not what happened.
No. And the thing is, it's like, you know, the only thing I do, like sometimes people will tell me, don't retweet some idiot like Ben, whatever his name is, Shapiro or something.
Right.
Or don't give him more. Great. And so sometimes I do believe that. Like, I'll take a screenshot sometimes because, you know, these people like Candace Owens and all these people, that's all they want is to say something horrible. Or, you know, I feel the same way about Bill Maher. You know, I used to, you know, his show I thought was interesting. And then he gets into that whole thing of like, I'm just going to say, I don't care what, I'm going to say whatever's on my mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
No matter if it's right or it's wrong, if I thought it out or I didn't think it out. So it's like people like him, like I really feel this way. His career is based on the only he is like a politician kind of guy in a or James O'Keefe because he is based on stunts.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly right. In fact, you know, you tweeted the other day, making fun of the concept of being woke is the new stupid. And I thought that was a great thought. I mean, one of the things that makes it particularly stupid is that it was co-opted from black people. The word woke. It's a black colloquialism, and the whitest people ever co-opted that word and then proceeded to bastardize it into an insult. And they say America's not a racist country, right, Andy? Just like, oh my God.
What you're saying is unbelievably true. And what it's really been true is this guy who I've had a feud with for years, although now I don't even care, but it's like this Sam Harris guy, who's this, that's his. All he does every 5 minutes, he goes, but there's these woke people. They've gone from where their shtick was atheism, new atheists, which I never thought would be that popular. I mean, it doesn't sound that much fun to believe in nothing. But it's like, but then it went straight from atheism to this right wing. It's the same people who say, who are trying to say people can't be trans. Or they can't, you know, it's like, it's just this new way of attack. And the fact that it's so racist. And this guy, Sam Harris, has been like, I don't know if you're familiar with him.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he's Sam Harris is one of the regulars on Joe Rogan's podcast, where I refer to Rogan's podcast as the Johns Hopkins of bro science. And that's exactly I mean,
that's
made
exactly
up.
It.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, in and of itself, in normal times, fine, do your bro science, talk about your pseudoscience and your space aliens and your Sasquatch and all the rest of it. But right now, we're running into a severe problem in this country, Andy, where a lot of people can't tell the difference between fiction and reality. I mean, the dividing line between fiction and reality is enormously blurred for people. We're being bombarded with information, and so many of us are going, well, I don't know what the hell's true or what's false or whatever, so I guess I'll believe this nonsense, this bro science that says if you're 20 years old and healthy, you don't need to get a vaccine. And that's, it drives me bananas. Yeah.
And how about the comedians? It's like, in the old days, it used to be like, you know, bad comics would just annoy me because they'd ask what part of of the chicken does the McRib come from. Now you've got these people like Adam Carolla just telling you not to get vaxxed.
Right.
You know, it's like, it's actually, their terrible material is dangerous now.
Yeah.
Not just bad.
Mm-hmm. See, are you still doing the state of the industry roasts? I mean, explain how that, first of all, explain how that came about, because it's seriously a ballsy move to stand up and evaluate other comics publicly. He's got to have, that's got to put a target on your back or something, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, and people, if anybody ever says, "Oh boy, that Kindler is fearless," I can assure you that I shake in my shoes often. The other day I was drinking a thing and it had the name of the company on it. And I was like, "Oh, I wonder if I can have this on camera." It's like, actually, yeah, I'm sure Lenny Bruce worried about that kind of thing.
That's right. Well, see, here's my thing. I delude myself into thinking, like, I'll talk about other podcasters or other politics people, and I go, I just delude myself into thinking, well, there's no way they're listening to this. They're never going to find out. So I'm just going to blah, 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 blah. That's how I get through it without shitting myself.
Well, I know that you probably are like me in that you just can't not say these things. And I've been this way my whole life. So when I first started to do it in, like, Montreal, I did this thing on I demonstrated how to be a hack comic. And then the next year they said, come back. And my manager recommended the state of the industry. And so for like, since 1996, I've been doing this speech where I like name names and all, and definitely hurt work, you know, like guys like Sandler ended up hating my guts. Wow. And you know, so I was thinking about Sandler last, and it's like, I hated him for so long, and I would make fun of him, and he would, you know, he would be angry at me, and he'd have all of his, you know, he has like a whole entourage around him that say, and I'm watching this Funny People. I'm like, I can't believe this is a movie. I don't know if you've seen it. It's a 3-hour thing where Sandler has cancer, and it's like, and I realized the reason why I can't stand him, it's like, he's the guy who would beat me up in Long Island when I grew up in Queens. That's Larry Charles is talking about Queens. Yeah. They're all guys like Sandler who are going, you have a funny voice, and then they give you noogies. I grew up, by the way, you said about Larry Charles, I grew up in Whitestone, which is right like 10 minutes from Shea Stadium.
Oh, wow. So it's like basically the same neighborhood. You know, it's funny with Sandler. He doesn't make movies. He makes cynical cash grabs. That's what I always think. Like, he's figured out a way to construct his budgets so that he can give all of his buddies a payday and make just a hunk of shit. And the way they've constructed the budget, it's going to make money no matter what.
To see all those guys get cars. But but on the other hand, he's so hyped, because I used to love Sandler when he was a stand-up. That's what the disappointment was from, when he, you know, but it's like, he is so thin skinned. Like, I heard he won't even say, you can't review his movies before they come out. And, I would have more respect for him if he goes, I know it's shit. Mm-hmm. That would be better.
Yeah.
But he thinks it's also good, I think.
Well, I mean, here's the thing with you, Andy. I mean, you criticize other comics, and it's all well-founded, I assure you. But you also famously deconstruct your own act while you're doing it. I mean, that's kind of your thing, where you're talking about your life, but you're also showing how the jokes are coming together and what in particular you were thinking when you created that joke. And it's immensely entertaining. In fact, one of my favorite jokes on your new album called Hence the Humor is when you say you were the first comic to ever laugh at your own joke as if you heard it for the first time. which is one of the great stand-up tropes. Yeah.
I can't help it, folks. I dragged myself up, folks. Right?
Yeah.
I killed it.
Right. As if you haven't gone over that line over and over and over and over again, honed it down, and then you're still pretending to laugh at your own joke, which is the joke.
I used to love the planned mistake. It was like, it was very, very cold, so I went inside and I put my coat on a hooker. Did I say to put my coat on a hooker? Because if I did, I have 45 minutes on it.
What are some of like your least favorite stand-up tropes? Like something a lot of people know. Like years and years ago, it used to always be about the airplane peanuts and stuff like that, you know? But what are some of the newer ones? Like what are some of the stand-up tropes that bug you right now?
Well, you know what? More what bugs me is because Twitter now, everyone has a love-hate relationship with Twitter.
Yeah.
But the most hacky things are on Twitter now because it's like, because science, you know, that kind of a thing.
Yes, I know exactly.
Said no one ever.
With apologies to cancer.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah.
That's my least favorite one.
Yeah.
You know, like,
oh yeah. And I go for that joke a lot too. Sorry, yeah. Cancer. He's worse than cancer. He's like cancer. Sorry, cancer. That's the thing too.
Well, it's one thing to do that joke. It's another thing to do that joke when 30 other people have already done the joke in the same thread. You know what I mean?
Yes. It's like
it's a little much.
It's like watching Chris Saliza try and be funny.
There you go. That's perfect. That's exactly what Chris Saliza would do to try to be funny.
He thinks he's funny. Don't you think he thinks he's kind of funny?
Yes. Oh, he thinks he's the cleverest man in the history of men. That's what Chris Saliza is all about. That's like his central thing. You deconstruct jokes. Chris Saliza thinks deep in his heart that he's funny. And when in fact, he's actually Lieutenant Hauk from Good Morning Vietnam. Chris Saliza is the Bruno Kirby character from Good Morning Vietnam. Which is probably the worst insult I think you could ever levy against a funny person. Oh, you're just like Bruno Kirby in Good Morning Vietnam. It's like the one that must cut you to the quick if you ever hear it. I'm not saying you have, but
you know. But the on the other side, you could say Bruno Kirby in Modern Romance.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, that's right. You know,
I love him. I love him in Spinal Tap.
Oh yeah. Oh my god.
He's reading the book. He's reading his Yes I Can, and he goes, "That book should be called Yes I Can if Frank says it's okay."
And then the window goes slowly up to shut him out. Yeah, perfect. Perfect. God. Yeah, you know, I mentioned her earlier. I really admire how Jen Kirkman handles replies on Twitter. She doesn't take any shit.
She's the greatest.
Yes. She's not afraid to go, fuck you and your fucking stupid reactions. I'm deleting this entire thread. And it's just like, you got to stand up and cheer for that because she's saying what we all want to say, but which we're not suicidal enough to say. You know what I mean?
She has an app where she can block more than one person at a time. She gets so much blocking. She's my favorite. She might be my favorite comedian. She is like, I love seeing her live. I love everything that she says. Mm-hmm. And I love when she goes through pain and struggles. She's
great. She is masterful. And of course, her five amazing appearances on Drunk History, in which she was basically like the centerpiece of that show. She was like the Charles Nelson Reilly of Drunk History.
I have not seen her on that. I have to check that out.
Yeah, yeah. She, at one point, she is so hammered, she ends up in a swimming pool, I think, at the end. And it's really entertaining. It convinced her. I mean, she told me on the show, she said that she would get so blackout drunk that it convinced her to just stop drinking altogether because she couldn't stand to get that blackout drunk. And of course, this is on the show. It's like five times, not just once, but five times on the same show.
God.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing.
This needs to be available separately.
Yeah, I know. They need to do like a separate like Blu-ray release of nothing but like the best of Jen Kirkman on Drunk History or something like that. So, what's the state of stand-up comedy right now coming out of this pandemic with the inability to tour and how that maybe has affected you guys and the entire industry of stand-up comedy? What's the status of things now? And then you got to loop in cancel culture and everything like that. And where are we with stand-up these days?
I think it's, you know, the thing is that for the speech, I wish things, in the old days when I would give the speech, it was actually easier because they were still doing sitcoms on that major networks. I mean, mm-hmm. there was like you could make, and everything, people were kind of aware of what's coming out. Now everything is so like spread out, but I actually do think there are more great comics now than I've ever seen. And also because when I started, you know, you couldn't like, Rosie O'Donnell couldn't say she was gay, you know, like Ellen couldn't. I mean, there were so many things that now those walls have been broken down.
Yeah.
So I think in many ways now is like the best time to be a comic in certain ways, but it was so weird because when I went into the quarantine, that's when I finally put this album out, the Hence the Humor. I had, because of the OCD problems, I had just not put it out. And then because I kept thinking, I want a physical copy of this. And now that's the last thing I want is someone to come up after a show with a diseased copy of some Journey thing and have me interact. I was in a way hoping this would never end because I really don't know if I want to interact.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, you know, speaking of Jen Kirkman again, I might as well just bring her on. Jen Kirkman. She was shooting a special across the hall. Now, she just did a video in which she was talking about how she likes how post COVID or, you know, we're not necessarily post COVID, but we're into a phase where things are a little bit more relaxed and she feels
the sun's coming out a little bit,
but she still likes the distance, the social distancing and the mask wearing and all that. I think that's a pretty good policy moving forward.
I have not been on a plane, but now I'm totally vaccinated. So, but it was weird because I, you know, not to bring everybody down, but last year was a rough year. I lost my dad in 2015. I lost my mom and sister last year, and right when the pandemic started.
Oh my God!
The most annoying. Yeah, it was really, and it was really long. But the thing that was so annoying about it was that I had to keep explaining to people, no, they did not die from COVID. Right. I understand that sounds like they should have, but you're trying to explain it and you have to spend two extra minutes. I can assure you it was not from COVID. So
yeah, you felt like you had to justify that it wasn't COVID, right?
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, so it was really, I mean, that was a big change. I'd gone so many years where all my family members were intact, and I, you know, sometimes would wish a couple of them would get ill.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's me and my brother.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to bring you down, Bob.
That's okay. That's fine. That's fine. All right.
Well, I'm the bad guy now. I'm the bad guy.
Well, what was your family? Were your folks supportive of your stand-up career? I mean, was there a moment when you kind of came to a mutual understanding, like, you know what, I'm going to pursue this as a career now because I feel like I can make money by standing on a stage and being funny. Do you support this? And what was your parents' reaction to that?
Well, my parents were in some ways great because they didn't ever say you can't do this or you can't do that. But on the other hand, it was that they didn't care.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they were a little bit, you know, it's like my dad was very supportive of me being a comedian. I was a musician before I was a comedian. He wasn't as supportive of, but they were never like the saying you couldn't do it. They just weren't going to help you.
Yeah, right, right.
Do whatever you believe in, but I'm not going to help you in any way.
Is there a thing, Andy, with music and comedy? It just seems like there are so many funny people who are also really good at playing music, too, or at least they dabble in both worlds. Have you noticed any sort of like characteristic or personality trait that extends between the worlds of comedy and music? Like some stand-ups want to be rock stars and rock stars want to be stand-ups, etc. Is there an overlap there?
Yeah, there definitely is. I mean, in terms of if you wanted to be, the idea that comedy was ever going to be like you as cool as rock and roll was in the 60s or 70s. Mm. I never thought that would happen, and I was right.
it's not
as cool, but absolutely there's so much crossover, and it has to probably do with all the timing and the rhythm and also the improvisation. Like I was a huge Deadhead. When I grew up, so I kind of loved the Dead for the fact that they were improvising. So there really is that crossover. Although I think I feel bad for musicians sometimes, because I was a songwriter before I was a comic, but comics always want musicians. We want musicians to say, "Hi, can you tell me I'm also good at music?" that doesn't work. You want that. That's something that we want in life, is that feedback that we're okay, but it's not a comfortable place to put musicians in.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it seems
tell me I'm good.
Yeah. Well, there's, I think you have the feature of performing live that I think is extraordinarily addictive, and in a very, very good way, I think. And so, of course, it can manifest in very, very bad ways as well, because, having that adulation from a large group of people, and if you're not wired for it, we've seen the self-destructiveness that can also come with that, whether you're a stand-up or you're a rock star. And so it seems like that's one of the common aspects of it, that desire to perform in front of people between those two worlds. And so that seems like the common element. But I think there's, I want to say comedy comes from a similar part of the brain as musicianship does.
And the perfect combination to me is someone like Randy Newman, who actually is, because that's so rare. I didn't know these songs like Sail Away were about slavery, and that he was right. This guy was writing about things that were so incredible, like amazing sarcasm and things like that. So, and also he was, I remember watching him in concert, and he was pretty funny, because I think a lot of musicians are funny.
Yeah.
So it does seem like it's part of the same muscle type of thing.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Comes from the same muscle.
Weirdly enough.
I'm sorry, I said muscle.
Well, weirdly enough, Randy Newman does a song, and it's a comedy song about Vladimir Putin. I don't know if you ever heard it, but it's hysterical. When we're done here, you got to go to YouTube or whatever, look up Randy Newman's Putin song, because it's...
I think I heard it once.
Yeah.
I think I did, but no, I'll check it out.
That's one you really have to dig deep to find the comedy in Vladimir Putin, unless you're talking about the picture where he's riding horseback with his shirt off or something like that.
Yeah.
Something that's
that we all love.
Right. So this is obviously a hot button issue, especially for funny people. But have you ever felt creatively stymied by the rise of cancel culture?
The thing is, it's one of those things where I personally haven't.
Yeah.
And I know it becomes like a thing now the Republicans are using, but it's really, I think it doesn't really exist. Like, people are saying it exists, but then I think sometimes it does exist. So it's like, if you wanted to have someone go to see Dave Attell, they may not get where he's coming from. So sometimes sometimes it's like Seinfeld, where he was like, got upset. And he's like, I can't do colleges anymore, because he had this joke where he said, and the guy was operating his phone like a gay French king, and it wasn't like he got booed.
Yeah.
But people didn't, rise up and carry him off with his shoulders. And that to me is like, at some point you're just going to, those jokes about guys looking gay, or they're just not going to be funny anymore. Yep. If you look back at Carson and Letterman in the 70s and 80s, how homophobic they were, it was like, it was just part of the thing. It doesn't mean it doesn't make them bad, but it's like things you outgrow. And I think a lot of times that's what it is. It's like people going, I can't do my, my stuff about Chaz Bono anymore. No, you can't, because it's not funny anymore to go. When I was first starting in comedy, I heard someone go, "Oh, nice to see you back in men's clothes." Like someone in the audience. I didn't even know what that meant.
Yeah, right, right.
I mean, that's just the truth of things. But then again, there is that things, people get shamed. I mean, I remember that story about a woman who made some stupid joke, and by the time she got off the plane, she had lost her job in Africa or something like that. She said some offhand thing. So I definitely think that the idea of shaming people is still a bad, you know, still can be something that gets out of hand.
Well, it seems to me as if, and in fact, I think I heard Seinfeld say something along these lines much more recently, which is that, you know what, ultimately, you can still tell jokes. You can still find a way to do your act. You just have to work a little bit harder to avoid some of the landmines. And that's that challenge should be something that's embraced by comics. You know, the ability to be able to zig and zag around all of these things.
Yeah.
And certainly the other thing is there is no giant hook on stage left coming out to drag you off stage if you say something offensive. You can still say offensive things. You can still tweak and push people's buttons, it seems to me. But you also have to realize, too, that the swinging door of free speech goes both ways. As much as you have free speech on stage, so does the audience. And that's the challenge, I think.
That's the key thing that you just said, was that the fact that a lot of it is that the comics don't want the audience going, I hate your fucking, you know, I hate that. I'm sorry, that poor man. And the first time I ever cursed on a radio show.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. No, but they'll, I forgot what I was saying then. Do you know what I was saying? what were we talking about? Oh, God, my mind went on me. That's another ADD thing.
I was mentioning that the free speech door swings both ways, and that.
Oh, yeah. So it's like, comics don't want to hear. Thank you for reminding me. It's comics don't want to hear people say that they don't, that object to their comedy.
Mm-hmm.
It's like objecting to someone's comedy is not during the show, obviously, but object. People, you don't have the right to have people not like your comedy and say so.
Yeah.
Right, and that's what I do. I mean, because that's the people I hate. I talk about them all the time. I'm not gonna not. That's not free speech. Like they just get to have an unimposed. Because I mean, a lot of comics used to say, like, you think the stage is a magic erasing area,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, like you get a free pass, but you just don't.
Yeah. I mean, it seems to make more sense to me to approach it similarly to what you just said, which is that it's not always cool to shame someone. But at the same time, if you make it a First Amendment argument, like a free speech argument, then you run into the problem where, for example, I'm a podcaster and I've got free speech. I can say what I want to say on my show. I just have to be prepared for the ramifications, because at the same time, my listeners also have free speech and they can say what they want. But it seems like, Andy, it's always been like that. I mean, you mentioned Lenny Bruce earlier. I think Lenny Bruce, you know, ran straight up against it, and in a very serious way, where he was dealing with blue laws, where it was actually against the law to say some of the things that he was saying and facing the consequences for it, which he also did. It wasn't like he was, you know, thinking that he should somehow avoid, you know, the penalty for what he was saying. He was just saying it. He was deliberately pushing the boundaries, right?
Absolutely. And that's the thing, too. It's like that was a dangerous time. And also what Zappa was talking about, like he was against all of the warning, you know, because all the things in the movies were like they would censor for sexual stuff, but they wouldn't censor for violent stuff.
Yeah.
And all of those things, of course, went back to the 30s and the Hayes Commission. And that was just out and out censorship. But on the other hand, if I have Andy Kindler's TV station, I don't have to put on the Nazi hour. I don't have to put on the skinhead afternoon. I'm not obligated as a person who owns a station to put on things that I think are horrible, you know?
Yeah.
So that's where it's like it never was free speech when they were saying it's like Trump does not have a right to be on Twitter. He has a right to say what he wants without the government arresting him.
Yeah, exactly right.
But it's not free speech to, you know, and I know it's dicey too, because they're gray areas and it's not so simple, but.
Yeah. Well, it is. And that's also the thing, that there is a lot of gray in there. There are exceptions. There are rules. And, you know, I think a lot of people try to define it as one way or another. Either I get to say everything I want or else, you know, or I just can't do my job. And it seems that's very limiting, no matter what it is you're doing, whether you're just a person, an quote unquote influencer on social media or a podcaster or a stand-up comic or a writer on a TV show. It seems to me as if those limitations also challenge you to find a new way to make people laugh. Or it shouldn't be so much like, let's just scream at the limitation. It should be, all right, let's find a way to tweak people while sidestepping, while flanking that limitation. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, same. It makes total sense. The same thing like in the work. Same thing with like in the workplace.
Yeah.
People like, you know, like, oh, I can't joke around. I can't make horrible jokes or whatever. Because yes, it's true. Like when three or four comics are hanging around,
yeah,
and we know who we are, we know no one's going to get insulted. We may say everything.
Mm-hmm.
We may say anything.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that you get. But that doesn't mean that in a work environment you get to be racist or you get to be sexist or you get to be, you know, there are, it's a different world than it was,
yeah,
40 years ago. And thank God,
mm-hmm,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
Because all of those limitations are in areas like, because that's what I think is really dangerous with the right wing and the white supremacy. And is when you get into these, when they start on trans people,
mm-hmm,
and they start, it's like, they're always looking for new people to pick on.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That are weak, you know, that thinking. But it's all about getting people who are like, yeah, that guy looks funny. I don't know. He's got long hair. And it's like, instead of saying, I don't know, and I want to find out, they'll encourage you to say, you know, I don't know what that is, but it's bad. It, yeah, has to be stopped.
Yeah. I'm not cracking any impenetrable nut here by saying this, but the fact is that one of the reasons why conservatives really can't be funny is because they're always punching down, right? They're always going,
absolutely,
after some disadvantaged, oppressed group, and they think it's still funny to go, you know, to point and go tee hee at a trans woman or whatever. For them,
right,
that's hysterical. And that's why, like, guys like Greg Gutfeld will always have an extremely limited audience because of that. And you kind of go, even if you don't realize the idea of how punching down is bad, I think we still instinctively recognize it. Don't you think?
I think so. And also just the idea of back in the 70s, back in the 80s, I was never like the Republicans, but they at least had, they would get something that had some realism, but now they're like, and then they would beat to death. But now they're like, we can't eat meat. Or whatever was going around that they thought. It's,
yeah,
such an obvious lie.
Uh-huh.
But now they seem to be saying, we know we're lying. We're happy with lying. And let's rock. I mean,
yeah. That's the thing, Andy, about the bubble mentality that we live in now, where with red hat conservatives, like Trump supporting Republicans, they know by this point that their entire audience, that all of their voters are all locked in this bubble and nothing is pushing through that surface tension. So what happens is they can say whatever the fuck they want to those people and they'll all believe it. And that's the damaging thing, and the thing that is,
yeah,
that we're seeing all the negative ramifications of, whether it's Q or the insurrection that occurred in January and all points in between. That's the real danger, is that bubble mentality. And one of the things that is circulating this bubble mentality, one of the bullshit things, is that Republicans hate cancel culture. And they did the whole CPAC convention. The whole theme of CPAC this year was hating cancel culture. And what are they doing today? What did they do today? They canceled,
yeah,
Liz Cheney. Right?
I know. I really think this Kevin McCarthy is maybe one of the, you know, like these people who were like, they didn't know much about it and they were so quickly happy about being evil. They're dangerous. Those guys worry me because,
yeah,
they literally have no scruples.
Right, right. That's just it. Well, let me, before we wrap up here, Andy, let me ask you about your podcast, Thought Spiral, which is one of my favorites. And one of the reasons why it's one of my favorite podcasts, you and J. Elvis Weinstein, Josh, you guys, when you start that show sometimes, It is one of the weirdest, like, let's just say, for example, one of the weirdest 5 minutes you're ever going to hear in podcasting. And there's lots of variety. I mean, you can get all kinds of podcasts, but the first 5 minutes of every episode of Thought Spiral, it takes me a couple of minutes to just go, okay, what are they saying here? It's there's singing and there's random words and it's really funny and weird. It is an incredible thing. How'd you end up connecting with Josh to do the show?
I've known Josh since the 90s, early 90s with all those guys, like the Freaks and Geeks guys and all like alternative comedy guys.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I've known him. Then I moved to the Valley in 2014 and I lived literally two blocks away from him. And then he suggested it, like, and I just was, you know, it was one of those things, like I thought about doing it, but I'd never done it. So then we used to go over to his house and we would advertise the show as two Jews, two microphones, 2 hours. And we just decided early on that we didn't want to go the route of getting guests because it would be, you know, just be too, you know, we decided on a certain format.
Yeah.
And then it just, you know, it's like the reason why it got even more stranger is because now I don't go to his house. We do everything on the phone.
Yep.
So, so that's why we have like two or three times a week. And then, I get to do, phone humor.
That's right.
Hello, Josh. Whatever the thing is.
Hey, is this phone number Klondike 53876 or, you know, yeah, lots of comedy, and lots of phone comedy.
And also the running thing is how I annoy Josh and how he reacts to it. That's the attraction of the show.
Yeah, that's my show. I see how badly I can annoy my co-hosts. That's a great approach to have. Always entertaining. Oh my God. You know, I heard yesterday that he might be returning to the new Mystery Science Theater with Joel Hodgson. Do you hear anything behind the scenes? Do you have any scoops along those lines? And is there any chance you join him and Joel on that show?
Well, I know the latter question. I will not be joining him. It's not that I'm banned, but I never was involved. So I doubt that they'd ask me. But I know he's doing at least one episode and maybe more. So he's very excited.
Let me one last question for you, Andy. I mean, we talked about some of the comics that we don't like. We talked about one of your favorites, Jen Kirkman. Who is the best working comic right now?
You know, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
I would say James Adomian.
James Adomian is a genius. Yes.
Yes. I just the level. If you go on to Instagram, he does an impression of Elon Musk. Eyes.
He does Elon Musk's eyes. That's great.
Yeah, it's like just the upper part of his head, and he doesn't even say anything. Just looks to the left, looks to the right, and it's unbelievable. I've been crazy about him for years, but yeah. I really think there's been nobody like him. The way he does voices and inhabits the people.
Oh, he does the greatest Chris Matthews, the greatest Bernie Sanders impression.
Yeah.
He did a Chris Matthews thing with Tony Atamanik as Trump, where they're talking about all of Trump's products, and including the Trump catheter. And then someone comes along and sticks the Trump catheter inside Chris Matthews, who's played by James Adomian. It's one of the funniest scenes I've ever seen. And then he does a bit. Then he does a bit as Bernie on the President Show, which is Tony Atamanik's Comedy Central show there for a couple of years. When he's doing Bernie, just saying 1%, it cracks me up. Just 1%, 1%. Tony Atamanik, when he's playing Trump, has James Adomian there on the set as Bernie Sanders, and he goes, "Oh, is that pixie dust on your shoulders?" And he goes, "No, it's cracker crumbs." Yes, it's cracker crumbs.
I hosted one of their debates.
Oh yeah. Oh my God. So exactly. Immensely funny, those two. Unbelievable.
And after it, Atomic said to me, he goes, "I should have told you that I don't go out of character." Because I thought he hated me as Trump. I was hosting it.
Occasionally he would. I've seen him on his show break character during an interview as Trump, but that's also very, very funny.
Oh yeah, he didn't mean it like Jim Carrey meant it with the, you know, like, okay, Jim, you were Andy Kaufman for 3 months.
Yeah,
no,
right.
he meant it more like he was gonna he forgot to tell me how mean that he was to the host. That's what it was. He forgot to say beforehand, I'm going to be very mean
I
to
see.
You. And so I just thought, oh my God, I'm hosting this horribly. He's really...
Well, the album is called Hence the Humor. I've got a link in the description at bobseska.com. The podcast is Thought Spiral. Of course, you get that wherever you get your podcasts, on the dozens of different platforms for finding your favorite podcast. Thank you so much, Andy, and feel free to eat all the bread you want. You have my permission.
Absolutely. It was such great. It was so great talking to you. And if you could get that part where my mind went completely blank, I think my therapist might want to hear that one.
All right, my friend. It was so great talking to you, and thanks for taking some time out today. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Take care of yourself.
You too. Bye-bye.